Yeah, talking about eufy.com. The Eufy video lock is unbelievable. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Best Buy stores starting on May 20th. What is it? It's a smart lock, 2K cam, and doorbell, 3-in-1, triple security, so you can have everything you need in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys like my wife. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips head screwdriver, no drilling required. It's got a keyless entry. No more fumbling for the keys. When hands are full, never worry about kids losing keys or passing among the renters of your house. You got a rental property out there, this is a must-have. I love this product. Just got it a couple weeks ago. Huge fan. Have the Ring camera. It's okay. It's not as great as this, so I swapped it out. Go to Eufy Video Lock today on YouTube. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit EUFYOfficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
If you're feeling sluggish, grab a CardoMax Energy Intensifier and wake up. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax's Energy Intensifier will help you power through workouts and dead afternoons with vitamins B3, B6, B12, caffeine, and BCAAs. Use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next 4 orders at CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Welcome to Drinking Bros Podcast, kids. Got a wild guest today, Dan. Mm. We've got Bruce Sackman on, the author of Behind the Murder Curtain, Special Agent Bruce Sackman Hunts Doctors and Nurses Who Kill Our Veterans. Is this true? Before we went on air, Bruce, Dan and I were chatting about this. Like, this doesn't seem real.
Well, it doesn't seem real unless, you know, you're a victim or the victim's families, but it's very real. And there's a history of this. Not that the VA is unique to have medical professionals who murder their patients, but in my experience, I had investigated doctors and nurses in the VA medical system that had actually intentionally murdered their patients. Not talking about a Kevorkian situation. I'm not talking about a situation where somebody is really suffering and the physician may take it upon himself to end that suffering. I'm talking about murder. I'm talking about doctors and nurses who murdered their patients. This is a phenomenon throughout the world, but right. In my former employment, I was responsible for looking at this within the VA medical system. Hmm.
What's the motivation behind wanting to murder these people? I don't understand. Is it financial? Because they don't want to take on the financial burden for the rest of their lives?
Actually, one size does not fit all. But I could tell you the majority of these healthcare serial killers throughout the world, including in the VA system, suffer from something called Munchausen syndrome by proxy. And what that incredible name actually implies is that these Munchausen syndrome are people who would intentionally harm themselves and then go into a hospital seeking care, you know, seeking somebody to really feel sorry for them, to take care of them, to show them the attention they don't get. Munchausen syndrome by proxy is when an individual, sometimes it's a mom who will intentionally harm a child, but in this case, it's doctors or nurses who will intentionally harm a patient and then show the staff what a caring physician or doctor they are, particularly when a code is called. And what I mean by a code is inside a hospital, all of a sudden a person is going into cardiac arrest and the bells and the whistles go off. And these individuals, they crave the excitement of the code. So they will actually put a person into a code situation and then show off to the staff what a fantastic caregiver they are, what a great professional they are by trying to save this person. Of course, they caused the code to begin with, and more often than not, the patient does not live, but the staff is impressed with their skills. In fact, there was a nurse serial killer in Massachusetts at the VA hospital in Massachusetts, and the doctors would say, you know, if I ever coded, I would want this nurse to come. She's fantastic. She takes charge. She starts barking orders out to the young interns who are scared shitless and don't know what to do. And this is the excitement that they crave. This is not only true in the VA system. I mean, this is true throughout the world.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's a very popular podcast that was recently turned into a series called Dr. Death that specializes on this exact thing that you're talking about, where it's this, in this case, it's a doctor who's going in killing his own patients just because he can, or oftentimes maiming them to certain ways. Like one was, I believe he paralyzed his own best friend from high school.
You know what this sounds like? That Munchausen syndrome sounds like a what's that documentary that Dave Chappelle references? I've mentioned it on the show before, where the pimp is explaining how he gets women to be subservient to him. He's like, he beats the shit out of them with like a fucking an extension cord, and then he leaves them in there for a while. Then he comes back with like water and pills and be like, here, I'll take care of you, right?
Right.
So it creates a circumstance under which he has to take care of that person. It is the same kind of strategy that you use during a torture session, by the way. So these people have, there's something fundamentally wrong with them as human beings. And somehow they slip through the cracks and wind up in medical service. There's only one rule in medicine: to do no harm, right? And it's existed before Western culture existed. It's been around for a while. Somehow we don't do a very good job of deciding who we allow to have control over our lives in a lot of ways. American politics is a good example of that, right?
Well, yeah. You know, if you think about it, if you're so inclined, it's interesting you mentioned that, because if you're so inclined to commit a series of murders, what profession and what location might you choose?
I mean, I would be an EMT, to be honest, if I was going to do it.
Really?
Well,
because there's no cameras on the fucking back of an EMT truck. Nobody's been admitted into the hospital yet. There's no paper trail for this person. They're just a victim on the street at that point, right?
Yeah.
And with COVID, remember, families are not allowed in the hospital. Right.
That's true.
And with HIPAA, the cameras are very, very limited. Mm. There are really no cameras in the patient's room. There are only cameras in the hallway. So between COVID and HIPAA, that really sets the stage where somebody might be inclined to commit murder. But if you are inclined to commit this, wouldn't you want to work with a group of people who have taken an oath, who have dedicated their lives to saving people, to saving lives? So if you could hide in that environment, an environment that everyone trusts, you know, listen to that doctor, sweetheart, listen to that nurse, they have your best interest in mind. And of course, 99.9% of the time, they do have your best interest in mind, all right? But if you're working in that environment, there's a fair chance you're going to get away with murder.
Now, you've worked in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs for a long time. You've been Office of Inspector General, Criminal Investigations Division, and you just recently, you retired in May of 2005 after 32 years of service. What made you want to come out and talk about this and bring this subject to light?
Because I wanted doctors and nurses and particularly managers of healthcare facilities to be aware of this.
Right.
Be aware that it's going on and how to spot these people and how to report these people and how to investigate these people. It took me a long time to learn myself how to do it. And that's the information that I wanted to impart on to others.
It's so wild to wrap your mind around why someone would even want to do this.
It's
hard to comprehend.
You can't really think about it in that way because these people are fucking crazy. Like, this is what everybody, when John Douglas wrote Mindhunter back in the day, like you've probably seen the series on Netflix, right?
Yep.
But when he and those guys were going around, Mark Olshaker, Shocker, I don't remember how you say his name, when they were going around interviewing all these serial killers, people in the FBI even didn't even believe that what they called sequence killers at the time was even a thing. They couldn't comprehend it. It's just mindless violence that's happening. Somebody's lost their mind. They didn't understand that these people are highly intelligent and motivated, right? Which is that produces, as we've seen in various conflicts throughout the world, that produces a certain kind of enemy that is very tough to fight, right? Because they blend in everywhere they go, but they are fucking... There's a sliding scale of crazy and capable that occurs where people can actually go blend into these professions and fuck people up. You know what I mean? And we've seen that here. And I imagine now with all the hype around true crime stuff over the past 5 to 10 years, it's probably been quite a bit easier for you to communicate your message than it was for Douglas back in the day. But it's the same kind of thing. People didn't know that was a thing. And now when we see a certain type of killing happening in a certain area of the country, you can pretty accurately figure out what kind of person is doing that shit.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's the profiling that they built is pretty good. But we're not able to do any of this profiling unless somebody like you comes around and tells everybody what they don't know.
Yeah. And I want to point out there is a big difference between what you might refer to as a traditional serial killer, you know, outside of the hospital, somebody that kills maybe 6 or 7 people. I mean, maybe these people, the victims are risk takers, maybe they're prostitutes, maybe they go jogging at 5 o'clock in the morning by themselves. Big difference between medical serial killers. I mean, if the average traditional serial killer kill 6 or 7 people, oh, they're amateurs. Amateurs compared to my medical serial killers. The average kills about 60 people, I would say. All right. Jesus. I mean, they kill so many people that when they finally want to cooperate, which is rare, they can't even remember themselves how many people they killed. And many of them get away with killing 10 or 15 people before someone even questions, hey, what's going on? And it usually starts like this. They say, you know, every time that nurse Bruce is on duty, the death rate goes up. Bruce takes a week or two vacation, the death rate goes down. And that's the way it starts. And it doesn't automatically mean that Bruce is a serial killer, because maybe Bruce has the sickest patients.
Right.
And if he has the sickest patients, maybe they will expire. But throughout the world, more often than not, that's how these cases begin. And management sometimes will poo-poo it as a statistical anomaly. Well, how would you like to be a statistical anomaly, or somebody in your family to be
right.
a statistical?
Well, I mean, how many times have organizations and institutions shielded the truth about something dangerous going on inside of their organization to make sure that the organization at large isn't labeled as such? I mean, the Catholic Church is a good example of that. They've gone to great lengths to, and said, if they had come out and fucking held these people accountable in the first place, the Catholic Church would be known for handling that situation. Instead, they're known for hiding that situation. Mm-hmm. But that's the easy road, right? It's tough to do PR when people that are wearing your flag on their shoulder are doing fucked up shit. I get it, but it can't be tolerated, right?
Let's say you're the director of a medical center.
Mm.
And somebody comes to you and they say, you know, we think this nurse maybe is intentionally harming people. Oh, that's going to go over real big, right?
I know.
I want to ask you a question, nurse. Did you actually see this person harm somebody? Well, no, I didn't actually see them, but it seems like every time they're on duty, the death rate goes up.
Mm.
So now you're the director of a hospital, and you have a couple of choices here at this particular point. You could do nothing, or you could actually criticize the whistleblower and saying, what are you trying to do here? You know what? We have a tough enough time making ends meet in this hospital. If the word gets out that somebody is intentionally harming people, you know what? It could close down this medical center.
Right.
We could all lose our jobs here. And there was actually a fascinating case in a place called Kermit, Texas, not involving the VA. But in Kermit, Texas,
I thought you were about to say not involving Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, I
don't know why my brain was like, "What is he? Is he right. Like you don't need to caveat that. We all know Kermit wasn't involved. I think, but now I kind of think he kind of was.
Yeah,
so maybe you're covering it up. He's covering it up for Kermit.
Is that you?
Well,
this is happening. The two nurses who were actually the entire compliance department of that hospital, they suspected a doctor of harming patients, and they went to management. And management said, do you know how hard it is to find doctors in Kermit, Texas? Why would you have to go all the way to the Philippines? And we'd even go further. So you know what? Unless you actually saw this doctor harm patients, just go back to your office and keep your mouth shut. So they said, well, what the hell are we going to do now?
Mm.
We went to the management, and the management poo-pooed it. So one nurse said, I got an idea. You know what I'm going to do? Let's send an anonymous letter to the State of Texas Medical Board telling them about this doctor, but we'll keep it anonymous. Well, the doctor finds out about this. He gets wind of it, and boy, is he pissed. So what does he do? He calls the local sheriff, who happened to be one of his patients, and he says, Sheriff, I think these women are intentionally trying to harm my reputation. And the sheriff says, don't worry about it, Doc. I'm on the case. And he gets a search warrant. He goes into their hospital computers, and he finds out that they were actually the author of the anonymous letter to the state claiming that he's harming patients.
Wow.
So wait. So what happens? The sheriff convinces the local prosecutor. They actually charge these women with misuse of official information, which is a felony in them parts, all right? And first nurse goes to trial. So they get fired. They get arrested for being a whistleblower, all right? Goes to trial. The jury comes back in about 15 minutes, and they say, what, are you kidding me? These nurses deserve a medal for what they did, not to be criminally prosecuted. But let me ask you this. What kind of message does that send out to the nursing community, to the medical community? Yeah, they won at the end.
Right.
They won their case, and they got money out of it. But look at the hell they went through now. I want to ask you this question, nurse. Are you prepared to go through that hell as a whistleblower? Because it could happen.
Right.
What was your first case? How did you get started in this, and how did you get so deeply involved?
And how long did it take you to convince yourself that what you were seeing was real? I mean, I know working in the FBI for that long, you probably dealt with some super fucked up people. So your measure for what people are capable of is way different than just some civilian walking the street. I mean, people like us that have deployed to wars and shit, I know what fucked up really looks like, and it's not here. So even then, the idea of healthcare professionals within the VA system specifically murdering people, that seems like a bit much. Like typically sequence or serial killers have some kind of code. Like they won't do this or they won't do that because it's all built around this abstraction in their head. It's weird that somebody would just be an opportunistic killer and choose the VA of all places, but maybe it's like the same reason Jack the Ripper, I talk about this all the time too. He murdered prostitutes because nobody gave a shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to fucking investigate that case. So maybe it was that, that these people saw the VA as a leaky bucket, for lack of a better phrase, that no one cared about. Right.
Well, I'll tell you how it all began. Okay. You know, I was the special agent in charge of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Office of Inspector General. And that meant I had the responsibility for all major criminal investigations from West Virginia to Maine. That covered all the hospitals, the regional offices.
Wow.
The whole package of the VA.
And then I mean, that's where Walter Reed is as well, right?
Yeah, but so, Walter Reed is not VA. Walter Reed is the Army.
Oh, it's DOD? Okay.
It's DOD. Okay. So VA, usually what happens is that after they're treated at the DOD facility, they wind up at the VA facility. All right. So what happened was one day I got a phone call from the chief of psychiatry at the Northport VA Medical Center out on Long Island. And she says, Bruce, you're not going to believe this, but we actually have a doctor working here treating our nation's heroes who spent time in prison for poisoning his coworkers. And I looked at the phone. I looked at my calendar and says, is this like April 1st, like an April Fool's Day? I couldn't believe that in the VA system, we would actually hire a doctor who spent time in prison for poisoning his coworkers. But I was wrong. That's exactly what we did. And his name was Michael Swango. Right? And I'll tell you a little bit briefly about Michael Swango. When he was in medical school, he was referred to as 00 Swango, licensed to kill.
Hey, they could have done better with that one. I would have gone Swango Unchained. But that's
yeah, but
me.
That movie hadn't come out yet.
True.
Because it seemed like every time he visited patients, they would die unexpectedly. And they went to the dean and they said, hey, dean, we don't think Swango should be a doctor. And by the way, Swango is an ex-Marine with an honorable discharge. And the dean said, I don't care what you guys think. You're only the students. I'm the dean. I think he just needs a little extra training. So they gave him a little extra training, and he winds up going to Ohio State University Medical Center.
Whoa, that's where I went. That's where I went to school. Okay.
Yeah.
He's a Buckeye. He's a Buckeye.
And there was a young student there, a gymnast. Her name was Cynthia McGee. Cynthia McGee gets in a car accident with another student. And she's actually improving in the hospital until she gets a visit from Dr. Swango. And then she dies unexpectedly. Well, what do you think happened? Did Swango get charged with it? No. The other student who had hit her with his car gets charged with vehicular homicide. But he didn't kill Cynthia McGee. It was actually Swango. And patients start dying unexpectedly. But they can't prove it's Swango because these cases are incredibly difficult to prove. But eventually Swango leaves and he goes to his first love, as you mentioned, being an EMT, right? Because he loved the excitement of being an EMT. And when he would periodically bring in some snacks and things for his coworkers, including donuts that were sprinkled with arsenic. And
what
then
the
he
fuck? Oh, wow.
That's yeah, like that's like bad television. What the hell?
And I like how you say it's just so calmly, like this is another day at the JOB for you, which it kind of is, I guess.
And then he would call them up and ask them to tell him, what were the symptoms? Tell me what was wrong with you. See, he wanted to relive the excitement twice, once by actually poisoning them, and then the second time by listening to how they suffered from the poisoning. So about a month or two later, he brings in some iced tea, but these EMTs were not stupid. They had tested. It was loaded with arsenic. The police did an excellent investigation. They went to his home. They found all kinds of poisons. And he gets sentenced to 3 years for poisoning his coworkers.
3 years? God damn. I'm going to start, if that's all it takes, and I've got a better lawyer than he does, for sure.
Yeah.
You guys are fucked. We're going to start poisoning everybody. 3 years, huh?
Oh, wait, it actually gets better because he comes out of prison. Now, I didn't think in the United States of America that you could spend time in prison for poisoning your coworkers and come out and be a physician, but I was wrong. because he comes out and he's very, very clever. You know, the sociopath is very, very clever. And he has a great way of speaking with people and convincing people of his story. And he starts changing documents and altering things. And he convinces people. Well, he says, you know what? I'm a tough ex-Marine. So I spent 6 months in prison because of a barroom brawl. But here's a letter from the governor restoring my civil rights. And they bought into it. They bought into it. Next thing you know, he's working at a VA hospital on the West Coast. And he meets a nurse, a VA nurse, and they get engaged. And everything's wonderful until the story comes out that he had spent time in prison for poisoning his coworkers. And his fiancée, she keeps getting a lot of headaches and break up. And she goes home to Virginia to mom and dad. And she said, you know, I really love this guy, Swango. I thought he was the man of my dreams. And then the story came out. I just can't take it anymore. So she goes to the park. She takes out a gun and she blows her brains out.
Jesus Christ.
Well, you can't blame Swango for that, can you? Well, actually, you can, because even though the body was cremated, the family kept a lock of her hair, and we kept the hair, and it was loaded with arsenic. So Swango was even poisoning his own fiance.
Is that, would that be like, I mean, even without the poison, though, isn't there something available, like depraved heart murder, for a situation like that as well? Where the person gets forced into a suicidal situation. I don't know if, I mean, it's hard to prove that shit, I guess, but having arsenic in the bloodstream or in the hair is pretty, that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, it's pretty convincing.
Especially coming from her fiance with a long history of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, he jumps around the country, and the next thing you know, he winds up going to Stony Brook University Medical Center on Long Island.
New York, yeah.
And he's going for a residency, and guess what field that it's in? It's actually in psychiatry, which means he had to go in front of a board of trained psychiatrists and convince them that he should be in their medical program. And he was so convincing that he convinced this board of psychiatrists to allow him. And Stony Brook University has a teaching arrangement with the Northport VA Medical Center. And that's how he wound up in my neighborhood in Northport. And then I got that call that I told you about. And I found it hard to believe, but I said, I have to go meet this guy. So I hop in the car with one of my agents and go visit him at the Northport VA Medical Center. And this is a handsome, charming, ex-Marine physician. You know, if I didn't know better, I'd probably want to introduce him to my daughter. I mean, if she brought home this ex-Marine physician, I'd go, holy cow, yes.
Yeah.
All right. And he was very handsome and charming. And he started with that same, you know, story that he gave everybody else. And then I said, well, you know, that's really interesting, doctor. But, you know, we have this story. Would you mind if I just kind of look around your room and, you know, just kind of search here? And that's when he completely changed his tune, wouldn't allow us to search. I call up the U.S. attorney, who would not give me a search warrant because we didn't have any evidence that he committed any crime out in Northport, VA. And next thing you know, the guy's gone. And he goes to Zimbabwe, Africa, because there's a shortage of physicians there. And when he went to Zimbabwe, Africa, he killed women and children and pregnant women, poisoned his landlady. And now he wants to go on to Saudi Arabia. But in order to go on to Saudi Arabia, he had to return to the United States to renew his passport. And that's when we arrested him, but not for murder, because at the time we didn't have any evidence that he murdered anybody. We actually arrested him for what I would say is every federal agent's favorite crime. That's lying to the government. False statements to the government, because he lied on his application about his background. All right. So he lied to me and he lied to the government. And now he gets again 3 years in jail for lying to me and lying to the government on his applications. And that gave us a window of 3 years to try to determine if he murdered any veterans at the VA Medical Center. And that's how the investigation began.
Holy shit.
And it turned out that he had killed several dozen people, right, just inside the VA system itself.
Well, within the VA, you know what? It's always difficult to say the exact number. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Swango himself can't even remember the exact number. I mean, we were able to positively prove that he killed three veterans at the Northport VA Medical Center. But he killed about 60 people around the world. And that's just an estimate because he himself can't even remember how many people he killed. And His murder weapons were, of course, supplied by the hospital, because if you're a medical serial killer, you don't have to smuggle in a knife or a gun. You know, all the death-dealing chemicals you would want are right there in the hospital, particularly on the crash cart if a code is called. So he used epinephrine, which is adrenaline, to speed up their hearts. And he also used something called succinylcholine in the hospital. They referred to it as sucks, which is a paralytic. If they want to put a tube down you, it actually paralyzes you. And there was no reason for these people to have these substances in their bodies. And that's how we were able to determine that they were murdered by him.
Man, that's unbelievable. Look, I know a lot of your cases have been featured on Discovery Health and CNN and MSNBC, even America's Most Wanted and HBO. What was the craziest one for you that you were like, man, even after solving this or figuring it out, that it still blows you away to this day?
Oh, you know, I would have to say that they all have their own craziness. I mean, let's talk a second about Nurse Gilbert, okay. All right? Nurse Gilbert in Massachusetts. Now, you know, my vision of a serial killer had always been like a Charles Manson type, you know, a guy with a swastika on his forehead and a crazy haircut. And here comes sort of an attractive soccer mom, you know, who says, oh, hi, Bruce. Yeah, no, I'll speak with you. I'm bringing my kids to the game. And then when I come back, I'll chat with you. That was never my vision of a serial killer. Yet she probably killed about 30 veterans at the VA Medical Center in Massachusetts. And she used epinephrine, and she attempted to kill her husband. And you know, the interesting thing about this particular case is when the case is over and we went to trial, the trial actually lasted for 6 months, and that she was found guilty. And the nurses who brought this case to our attention, the whistleblowers.
Yeah.
They went back to work, and their coworkers despised them. They despised them for bringing this matter to my attention. They say, you see what you did here? Now, every time people drive by the hospital, they're not going to think about all the lives we saved. They're not going to think about all the wonderful things we do. They're going to think about Kristen Gilbert, who murdered people at this hospital.
Right.
Why did you have to call this guy? Why did you have to bring this to law enforcement? And that's what a number of whistleblowers have actually gone through.
Bruce, you've done some podcasts. You know we got some sponsors that pay for the shit wagon to be on the air. First and foremost, GhostBed.com/drinkingbros. I used the promo code last night. I do not care. I use my own promo codes. I do not care. And all I ordered was a box spring. Why? Because I have ghost bed products in every single room of my house. I've got the mattresses. I've got the sheets. I even have the adjustable base in my room. Obviously, the kids aren't getting one because they don't need that. They're children. That'd be a little much for them. Might as well let them sleep in the master like Andrew Cunanan. Not doing it. Sorry. But got some people coming into town. They needed a new box spring upstairs. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today and jump on these fucking deals, dude. The 40% off flash sale, Dan, is still in effect right now.
Yeah, it is. If you need the bundle, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for the adjustable base plus the mattress, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get 40% off that whole deal. That's ridiculous.
And if you want to couple in pillows and sheets and all that other shit, they let you do that as well. Yeah. Otherwise, type in the promo code DRINKINGBROS at checkout for 30% off everything in the entire store. And right now, I believe they still have the mattress, with the two free pillows. If you buy the mattress, double check that though. However, there's always great deals going on at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. And as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there. And if you have decent credit, obviously, don't come at me with a fucking dog shit credit score. Damn it. You can bundle all those deals together and then walk out of there with like probably $35 to $38 a month.
Something like that, yeah.
For a brand new bedroom set. It's amazing, dude. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today. What are you waiting for? While you're in bed, relaxing, chilling out, watching things on television or Discovery Plus, planning out fake trips with your wives, girlfriends, boyfriends, mistresses, whoever, you might as well get Babbel.com. That is Babbel.com and use the promo code Drinking Bros for an extra 3 months free. This is where you're learning a new language, Dan.
Yeah, this is the best language learning. I was going to say software, but of really any kind, whether it came to textbook learning in middle and high school, even to some degree in college, or direct training from language specialists and things like that. This is the best thing I've seen, and it just works with how human life operates these days.
Yeah,
short bite-sized training, 15-minute segments of this stuff.
You get 15-minute lessons.
Yeah, get to choose how many you're doing. Mm-hmm. There's built-in recall devices. Inside of this stuff. It's, from what I know about education, very scientifically programmed, unlike some of the other infamous language classes that you guys took in high school, or the shitty software that's been out there over the years. A lot of you have used it as part of the federal government. This stuff is developed by actual language experts and not algorithms and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's very, very good. Over 100 language experts helped build this programming, this 14 languages, all the main ones, Spanish, French, Italian, German. If you're planning some kind of trip to like the Caribbean or whatever the fuck,
yeah,
this summer, now's the time, man, to start learning this stuff. At least get some kind of conversational, backbone.
Yeah.
So you don't sound like a total idiot.
Yeah.
When you go places, right? they've got the speech recognition technology, which I really enjoyed because I don't really have much of an accent, but people who do have accents have a hard time, in some of these languages. It teaches you how to use the right accent. There's also a bunch of internal apparatuses like games, podcasts you can listen to, all this other stuff that can help you learn the language in a native way, right? In a way that a normal human being would learn it. So now they get the good deal, right?
That's 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German there.
Bibbidi-boppity.
So right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to Babbel.com and use the promo code DRINKINGBROS. That's Babbel.com. Promo code Drinking Bros for an extra 3 months free. Last but not least, we've got PureJerkyCo.com. Man, love these fucking guys. Best jerky on the planet. Dan and I have had an ongoing competition with you guys, the listeners, on this. If there is a better jerky on the planet, you are welcome to come up and slap us in the face when you see us. However, you must give us that jerky that has beaten this one. I doubt you'll find it. There's been 3,000, 4,000 of you guys. I don't think I've gotten one bad report back of like, it's the best jerky you can possibly have, dude.
Somebody put 6 out of 10 in the YouTube chat.
I know who that is. They have a jerky company. Send me your jerky. I'll be happy to put it up against the test live on air and tell you if your jerky beats purejerkyco.com. I doubt it. They have a subscription to the month club. I am on it. It is one of those products that comes into the office and everybody eats it the first fucking day. We barely get to have any of it. Finally, I just have it shipped to the house. Look, 4 bags for $25. You can get 8 for like 50. And then the box, dude, the box that is on my desk right now, this Pure with, it's burned into the wood. The craftsmanship on this is amazing, but more importantly, there's more jerky in it. So go to purejerkyco.com, promo code Drinking Bros, 10% off, 10% off All I'm asking, buy the fucking four bags. Tell me if you've had something better in this life. That's it. That is purejerkyco.com, promo code Drinking Bros for 10% off.
And if you tell us that there's a jerky that's better and you bring it here and it's some bullshit jerky, we are going to fuck you up.
Yes, dude.
Like, badly.
Yes. I'm going to light you up on air.
Yeah, you're just, I mean, it's going to be rough.
Milk game, dude. Shoe program. Go to purejerkyco.com, promo code Drinking Bros, 10% off. Thank you, Bruce. Well, you can certainly understand it, especially when you're trying to do good. You know, you don't want anything that negative associated with something that you're, you know, a job you go to every day where you're trying to heal people and help them survive and or live. So I kind of understand it in a way.
If it's somebody stealing office supplies or getting high on fucking Percocet that they're yanking out of the pharmacy, that's one thing, right?
Yeah.
But when they're murdering people, there's got to be some fucking line in the sand. I believe murder should probably be on the other side of that line. You would think so, right? I mean, there's certainly some level of self-interest involved, but I've found when dealing with issues like this and whistleblowers that the bystander effect comes into play big time. Nobody wants to focus on them, mm-hmm. especially when shit's fucked up. It doesn't matter if you're to blame or not. You could talk about the Afghanistan thing. The way Biden pulled out of this shit was wrong, but he didn't start this war. We're four presidents deep in this shit. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of blame to go around, but he's going to catch 100% of it.
Yes, because
he was the guy there when it all fell apart. And to be honest, I feel like people are, for the same reason you fucking divert your eyes and keep walking when somebody trips or does something embarrassing because you don't want to fucking feel that shared responsibility for the embarrassment, people are going to keep their eyes straight ahead in that situation and let stuff like that happen. That is the wrong answer.
Yeah.
I mean, the see something, say something thing. Fuck that. Do something.
Yeah, do something about it. Are you still a self-employed licensed private investigator in New York City right now?
No, I've actually retired from that. I just do consulting and writing now. After I retired from the VA, I spent 15 years doing internal investigations in a very large hospital system in New York City. No medical serial killers, but a lot of other problems, you know, drug diversions and frauds and thefts and bribery. And like I said, the smorgasbord of cases, you know, you have to remember hospitals are like huge cities. I mean, the hospital system that I was involved with is $8 billion hospital system. Can you imagine how much procurement they do? I mean, if you had a business, don't you want to do business with an $8 billion company? Sure. So might you want to, you know, pay a bribe or something to get in? Yeah, you might. And so that was one area. And then also, you know, we had drug diversion. We had doctors and nurses who were stealing drugs, usually for themselves, but not always. In fact, we had a case where the director of pharmacy diverted 200,000 doses of oxycodone from the pharmacy over a five-year period.
Wow.
And that was the largest known diversion by a pharmacist ever.
That's crazy. You don't have their number, do you? Yeah. Totally kidding. how do you compartmentalize this stuff? And like, you seem like the nicest, most affable guy who's seen the most horrific shit on the planet. How do you compartmentalize this and just go to sleep at night and be like, well, that was, I enjoyed the Ozarks tonight or whatever you were watching. White Lotus.
Are you asking why there's a higher propensity for alcoholism in police officers?
No.
You're answering your own question.
With him personally, you seem completely normal. Maybe there's something dark there, but just talking to you today, you seem amazing. Whereas Dan seems like a fucking piece of shit. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know
I'm openly a piece of shit. So,
correct. Yeah. How did you get through all of this, dealing with this on a day in and day out basis for so many years?
You know what? I don't really give it much thought, to tell you the truth. I just kind of roll with it. You know, I mean, at first it was a bit of a culture shock because, as I said, I was basically a white collar crime investigator until I got that call about Swango. Next thing I know, sometime later, I find myself in a cemetery where we're exhuming bodies and we're digging up bodies. This isn't stuff that white collar crime investigators do. Then I find myself at the Suffolk County Medical Examiner's Office witnessing autopsies. I had never been in a situation like that before. It's a real culture shock at first, but after a while, you know, like anything else, you kind of get used to it. I mean, the worst part of this all, I say, you know, of these cases is when you have to deal with the families of the victims, you know, because what we would have to do, let's say in all our cases, not only would we get a court order to exhume the body, but let's say it's your dad. I would have to ring your doorbell and say, good afternoon, sir. My name is Bruce Sackman. I'm from the VA Office of Inspector General, and we have reason to believe that your dad's death at the VA hospital was suspicious. Can I have permission to go to the cemetery and exhume his body and do an autopsy? I mean, that's a visit you'll never forget.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah, that is. And I tell you, the families were fantastic. I mean, they all agreed. On some occasions, the families would actually want to come and they would actually want to witness the exhumation. Most of the times not, but sometimes they would. You know, and of course, we were very respectful. Our agents brought flowers for the family. We were very careful to when it's over to replace the coffin in the ground respectfully. We had a world of respect for not only the families, but the deceased here. But it's an experience. It really is an experience.
When you guys were exhuming bodies, did you ever see anything weird inside the coffin where you're like, oh, shit, I was definitely not expecting to see that. Like somebody got buried with their favorite dildo or something like that.
Mm.
You know what? That is not as uncommon as you think.
I know. I
wait, what would you be buried with?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, so it's the reason why I bring this up, this is no lie.
He's got to caveat it up front because it's fucking weird. Yeah, otherwise, yeah. He would have just said what it was. Yeah. Like the family pet or whatever. No, it's going to be like some fucking weird shit. Like a pair of socks that you pounded off into in high school or some shit.
No, look, it's just my baby shoes, you know. But I want them put on because they're only going to fit again after my feet disintegrate. So I want my baby shoes back on. No, but the reason I bring this up is, no lie, I think on my Instagram page last week, I had posted about there's a culture in Indonesia where every 3 years – the Torajan people.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they dig up the bodies and exhume the bodies every 3 years, dress them up, and then they have a party and or celebration with their deceased relatives.
It's a little macabre. But
yeah.
But so is burying people in the ground. You know what I mean?
One of the guys had a hat on like sideways as if he was, you know, maybe a gangbanger kind of or, you know, drive-by type of dude or just love some codeine, some perp.
Yeah. Maybe he just needed to see better.
Yeah. So I'm assuming, you know, because when I saw that, I was like, holy shit, that's wild. Now I'm like, well, it makes sense. There was a viral video going around this morning where everybody's dancing over this this guy's coffin who's about to be buried, and a girl is twerking over his face, and then they proceed to pour out 40s of beer all over the coffin, and then they just placed the empty bottles inside the coffin, and then that's how they were buried. So that's why I'm asking this, is this has been going around the last couple of weeks, and I'm like, shit, man, people really fucking put weird shit in there. What's the weirdest thing you've seen?
Well, there were beer cans. You know, somebody got buried with their favorite beer. But you know, the one thing is, it actually kind of helps us to identify that we have the right body, because sometimes coffins could shift, you know, if there's a flood or if there's been a lot of underground water. Digging up a body, and you may not have the right body because the right body shifted to the grave next door. So if they say, well, you know, we buried dad with his favorite shoes, his favorite can of beer, whatever, that's actually kind of helpful.
Okay.
For us to identify the bodies, you know, and bodies come in different states. It all depends on the embalming process. You know, I mean, sometimes if you put in a lot of embalming fluid, the body is going to look a lot better than if you didn't. Now, the first body that I saw, do you remember that show, Tales from the Crypt?
Oh, yeah.
So remember what that character looked like?
The Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi.
That's sort of like what first body look like, but right. Then other bodies look much more pristine depending on the embalming process.
Well, some of the ones we saw in that India thing looked like they had only been buried for maybe a couple of months, not 3 years plus, right?
Yeah.
Like there was still plenty of tissue and shit on that body. I don't know what India does as far as embalming goes, but
I don't either.
I was very surprised to see that.
Do you remember in Yellowstone when Rip digs up his dead mom so he can give Beth the ring?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, the question was between the two gravediggers of like, hey, who did the embalming? And it was like, well, if it was so-and-so, the body's going to look pretty good. And I didn't know that was a thing. So you're saying that is a thing. If you embalm a body correctly, they'll be more naturally preserved than
maybe
others.
Correctly is not the right word. Just it's two different ways of doing it, probably, right?
Eh,
like, what's the purpose of making the dead tissue in the body last longer? Who cares?
In case you want to dig it up, Dan, and party later. You know what I'm saying? So, so there is a difference. That's real.
There is a difference.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, with you, knowing what you know now, do you even want to be buried or do you want to be cremated? I'm a cremation guy myself.
Yeah, I try not to dwell on the topic, but either one would be fine because I'm not going to really know.
Yeah.
So either one, whatever the family, you know, would prefer, but cremation is fine with me.
Okay. And what does your wife think about?
The lock of my hair, just in case.
Yeah. Keep a lock of your hair. Yeah, great hair, by the way. Way to go.
Mm-hmm.
What does your wife think about what you've done for a living? And what are the conversations like at the dinner table before you retired?
You know, we don't really chat about it that much. She was always concerned that one of these medical serial killers might escape prison and come looking for me, you know. But other than that, which is not going to happen. I mean, Swango was in Supermax Federal Penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't getting out. Nobody out of there, you know. And Kristen Gilbert and the others are all locked away with multiple life sentences. So I don't really have any fear of that.
I'm going to be honest with you. You have the demeanor of a serial killer. Like, you're almost too nice of a guy for what you've done as your career in profession.
Well, I mean, you either internalize that stuff and it becomes part of your character, or like he said, he just doesn't dwell on it. I mean, that's a strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why the shower principle works. You're distracting your prefrontal cortex and letting your body do mechanical shit.
Sure.
Same thing. There's plenty of psychological studies that have been done on that. Like when we talked about not too long ago, where we think that the mind controls the body, but when you're depressed, the act of forcing yourself to smile can create endorphins in your body that actually make you happier, right? So there are physiological things you can do to affect your mind as well, is what I'm saying. And people like him that has to deal with that shit all the time, probably just fucking leave that shit at work.
Yeah, it's amazing you're able to. It's shocking.
Yeah, well, you know, it just kind of goes with the territory. But I never lost sleep over it. I had nightmares over it or anything like that. I say, you know, the most dramatic part is when you're dealing with the families, understandably. In fact, interesting, in the case of Kristen Gilbert was a death penalty case in a state that does not have the death penalty. Now, how could that happen? Well, because the crimes occurred at a VA federal facility, all right? She was actually charged under federal law, not Massachusetts law. And she was charged in federal court. So after a 6-month trial, there's a second mini trial where the jury has to determine whether she should get the death penalty or not. And that's when the family has an opportunity to come up and talk about Dad. And at this mini trial, they show pictures of Dad in the service and pictures of his life, pictures with him with the grandchildren and all. And, you know, the interesting thing about this, you'll hear from all the families, is that they never thought that Dad was going to expire when he did, because they thought that Dad was doing fine. In fact, some of them actually went on vacation, say, oh, we can leave Dad, he's doing fine, only to get a phone call from somebody like Swango saying your dad expired. And when Swango would call them, he would go into great detail about their last half hour of death, because that was giving him the opportunity to relive the excitement of the murders that he had committed. So it was really a terrible thing.
That's a pretty common thing too, right? People returning to the scene of the crime. I would imagine somebody that joins that profession to commit those types of crimes, that's just kind of intrinsic to your workplace at that point. Like, you can do that shit whenever you want. I mean, that's got to be pretty attractive to a fucking psychopath.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, if you have it, if you don't, you know, like the scene of the, one of the crimes that I attended in person was that Falcons Super Bowl loss when it was 28-3. I won't return to that stadium. And then therefore it proves that I'm obviously not a psychopath. But I won't go back to the Houston Texans stadium ever again after what I witnessed there. Because I just don't have that in me. I don't have that in me. I want to ask you about some of your editorial reviews here on your book, because how did you get Terrence Winter, the creator and executive producer of Boardwalk Empire? Like,
One of my coworkers knows him.
No shit.
Yeah.
Because that's a hard guy to get a hold of. And you'd imagine, like, oh, hey, dude. Does he have time to really sit down and read and go through it like this? And I'm always curious whenever we have authors on the show, because when you have a guy like Terrence Winter, I was like, man, that guy doesn't sit down for anything. No. Yeah. One of your coworkers knew him.
Yeah.
Got it. Got it, man. That's a big pull right there, by the way.
It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big pull. So what do you do to occupy your time now? After living the life that you had, do you just kind of retire and then forget all about it?
No. I actually, you know, I have two other books. One I'm writing now. The other book is called The Art of Investigation. It's a collection of stories by investigators all over the world. And now I'm doing a second book with the same title, Book Two, The Art of Investigation, which is used by criminal justice students throughout the United States. And I enjoy going to lectures. I mean, last week I was at the International Homicide Investigators Association, and I lectured there for a couple of hours to homicide detectives. And I've been around the world. I've been to London and Wales and Stockholm and Dubai, actually, speaking to audiences about this. My favorite audience is actually, believe it or not, are the nurses. I mean, they are really very interested in this and why their coworkers engage on rare occasion, you know.
Yeah.
Why they engage in this kind of activity all over the world. You know, there was a couple of nurses in Canada. Italy has a number of nurses. Germany, interesting thing about Germany. Germany, there's a nurse that killed, well, the German police, who I recently met with, they suspected maybe 300 people, but he was actually charged with killing about 100 people. The same thing, Munchausen syndrome by proxy. And which is also common from these medical serial killers, they travel from hospital to hospital to hospital. So when the first hospital suspects something, they never say anything to the second hospital. They're just happy to get rid of this person. And then after a while, at the second hospital, they suspect something. So they're happy to move him on to the third hospital. So these people travel to hospital, hospital, hospital until they finally get caught. Now in Germany, for the very first time that I'm aware of on the planet Earth, the German prosecutors have actually charged the managers who knew this and allowed the person to pass on without actually notifying the police. And that's the one and only time that I'm aware of this ever happening throughout history.
Wow. Do you look at famous cases that go on and try to diagnose it or try to figure it out on your own, knowing what you know? Like, did you look at like the case, the Anthony case, for example, and say, all right, I know how she killed her daughter?
No, you know what? I don't. My area of expertise are medical serial killers, and I really don't claim to have an expertise in any other areas. But if there are doctors and nurses involved, then inevitably I'll get called by either the prosecutor or the investigators. There are a couple of them ongoing now to assist and give them my experience, because it takes a team of people to investigate these cases. I don't care if you're the reincarnation or Sherlock Holmes. I mean, it requires physicians who are expert in chart review. It requires toxicologists. It requires investigators. It requires this wonderful, relatively new profession called forensic nurses, that are nurses that are trained in both the science of nursing as well as forensics. And they are phenomenal, because they could bridge the gap between the very high-tech science that lay people don't understand and the investigators. And they are just a phenomenal group of people. So when you have the right team to put together, then there's a high probability that you'll be successful, but it takes a very long time and a lot of work and a lot of money. And most local police departments, they don't have the money. Hey, yeah. Look, let's say, you know, I'm from a local police department and I go to the hospital and I meet the hospital director. He'll say something like this. He'll say, thank you very much, officer, for coming to this hospital. You know, we were as concerned as you were about these allegations. So you know what we did? We appointed a board of our very, very best physicians, and we had them look at the patient's records. And you know what they determined? They determined that all the patients died as a result of their natural disease processes. Sometimes we even, did autopsies. And if you look at the death certificates, it clearly states the cause of death, usually myocardial infarction or some kind of heart-related ailment. So now, officer, if you want to challenge all this expertise, well, you know, go ahead. But this is what our report says. And how many police departments are just going to turn around and walk out the door and say, thank you very much?
Right. When you have a mayor and a city council that holds you as a chief accountable based on your clearance record for murders, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't go looking for murders that you don't have a solution to already, because that's how you get fired, unfortunately.
Right.
I mean, we go watch the goddamn Wire. You think it's fiction, but that is exactly how it works all over the fucking place. We've been talking about that shit all day today. I mean, you can see it pop up all over the place. It's just people who are more concerned about themselves and their status and position, or more affected by their fear than they are driven by doing what's right and taking care of other people. That's a huge problem in our society these days. Well, I guess forever, really.
Yeah.
And look at it this way. Most cops don't become cops because they're good in chemistry and biology. So it's very, very easy for them to be intimidated, not only by the science, but even the law. Like, what is this HIPAA thing? And what do I need to get records? Do I need a subpoena? Do I need a court order? Do I need a subpoena that's signed by a judge? I mean, who's going to review all these medical records? You go on and on and on. So most cops don't want to do investigations in hospitals. They'd rather just turn around and walk away.
Was there a case that you knew the guy was absolutely guilty, but you just couldn't prove it?
Yes. There's a case in the book, in Behind the Murder Curtain. There's a case of the alleged, because I have to use that word, alleged serial killer named Richard Williams. Richard Williams allegedly killed about 60 veterans at the Harry S. Truman Medical Center in Missouri. And this is what happened with that. The FBI and the VA Inspector General started an investigation, and they could not find the cause of death. And it started the same way. Every time Nurse Williams is on duty, the death rate goes up. Nurse Williams takes a week off, the death rate goes down. So you know what? The director said, oh, I got an idea. Let's assign another nurse to work with Nurse Williams and kind of watch him. So when the second nurse was following Nurse Williams, the death rate was fine. But when that second nurse had to take a week off or had to do something, guess what happened? The death rate went up. Right? So what's the cause of death? We could not determine what the cause of death of these patients was until my office, because I didn't normally cover Missouri, my office took a look at it. The inspector general said, Bruce, you have been successful with these other cases. Take a look at the case of Richard Williams, even though the FBI and our own organization couldn't. So it was these wonderful forensic nurses that looked at the patient's records and said, you know what? I think he's been using succinylcholine. So we went to this private lab, and I said to the lab, can you actually find traces of succinylcholine and an embalmed tissue? And they said, Bruce, you're in luck. We got this brand new machine. It's called the High Performance Liquid Chromatography Tandem Mass Spectrometer.
God damn, that's a lot of words.
Right. So how does it work? Bruce, you wouldn't understand. You couldn't understand. Let me just tell you. We take a little tissue sample, and it goes through the machine, and eventually we're able to say that it's succinylcholine. So Richard Williams gets indicted for murdering 13 patients at the Harry S. Truman VA Medical Center. And then I get a phone call from the lab, and they say, oh, Bruce, you know what? We made a mistake. We can't really say that it's succinylcholine. And unfortunately, the Harry S. Truman Medical Center is not exclusive federal jurisdiction or even concurrent jurisdiction like it was in Massachusetts or on Long Island. They had something called proprietorial jurisdiction, which means the state has primary jurisdiction, and the state prosecutor would not pursue the case against Richard Williams because the toxicology could not prove that it was succinylcholine that he used to kill people. Now, the family of one of the victims sued the VA and won. They sued the VA, and the judge says, yeah, I think Richard Williams is a serial killer. But there's a big difference in the level of proof between a civil case and a criminal case. Because a civil case only requires a preponderance of evidence, mm-hmm. which is like 51% of the evidence.
Right.
While a criminal case is, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, and the prosecutor felt that he could not prove that case. So Richard Williams no longer in the nursing profession or in the medical profession. But I think that he killed people? Yes. But until I can prove it, it's just an allegation.
Do you still
and that one takes a micro up.
Yeah. Did you keep working on it even though, you know, it was done and everything else?
We're hoping is that the science will improve and that the scientists could actually come out with a positive determination that these people had succinylcholine in their bodies and they shouldn't have succinylcholine in his body. And he was the one administered. But until that time, it's just he's an alleged serial killer.
Where is he at today?
He's still in Missouri somewhere. You know, last time I looked, he's certainly not working in the medical profession at all. Had a variety of jobs. He's a real loser, but he won this one. I mean, so far, we're wow. still trying, but right now I cannot say definitively that he murdered anybody.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. You look back at it because there's been a lot of cases that have been overturned once the science catches up to, you know, yes. what the evidence that was presented. You know, it's easier in hindsight to say it because you have the technology and science. But with you, you're still waiting for more to be done. So some of these cases could potentially get solved.
Exactly right.
Man.
Exactly right. Because there are still drugs on that crash cart that are untraceable, even with today's modern toxicology, particularly in embalmed tissue.
That's crazy. Now's the point in the show where we get to this thing called the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
I would have to give it to Dr. Michael Bodden, the forensic medical examiner. If you recall, he had a show called Autopsy on HBO.
Oh, yeah.
Remember a number of years ago? And when I first got this case, the Swango case, I don't even think I could spell homicide. I had no idea how to do these investigations. And my boss said, I want to introduce you to Dr. Michael Bodden. And learning how to do these cases from Dr. Michael Bodden was like learning physics from Albert Einstein. I mean, you just couldn't get a better teacher. And he took me by the hand and explained to me how to do this and work with me in every one of my cases. And he's just phenomenal.
That's awesome. Well, the book is called Behind the Murder Curtain. Special Agent Bruce Sackman hunts doctors and nurses who kill our veterans. It is out everywhere today, hardback, paperback, Kindle, you name it. No audiobook, Bruce, huh?
I know. From your mouth to the publishers, I keep asking for it, but I'm not getting a positive response.
Who is the publisher, by the way?
Well, it's actually a subsidiary. Yeah, it's actually a subsidiary of a large company, but it's known as Post Hill Press.
Okay,
Hill Press, and here's the book, and I hope everybody reads it. I particularly like when my medical professionals read it, you know, because I really want them to know what's going on out there. And I am very, very concerned about the future, particularly with COVID and particularly with all these biomedical devices now we're hooking up to patients that are internet-based? And could any of them be hacked and result in the murder of our patients? I believe the answer is yes.
Why COVID?
Well, because, you know, COVID has required hospitals to recruit people on an emergency basis and kind of suspend the thorough background investigation that they would automatically do. Look, I understand that if the enemy's coming over the hill, you don't have time to do a full background investigation on every troop that's out there to defend you. So now we have these terrible increase in cases, and the hospitals need doctors and nurses. And most of the traveling doctors and nurses are outstanding, but this would give an opportunity for somebody almost like a Swango to kind of sneak in because of the crisis situation.
Yeah, it makes sense now that you say it out loud, because, you know, flu deaths have magically vanished. And
well, I mean, it's after Katrina, there is a lot of people in the FBI have a number of different suspects that they think just went fucking roughshod over Katrina afterwards and murdered a bunch of people because there's nobody down there to pay any attention to it, I guess. And then also, like he's saying, the situation was so fucked up. I mean, there were so many people deployed to that area. There's no way you could have accounted for everybody.
Right.
You know what I mean? You could just get you don't even necessarily have to work for one of the organizations. You could just put a fucking road guard vest on and walk out there, and people are going to assume you're there to help.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just that kind of situation breeds any situation like that. Whether it's, I mean, look at all the institutions in the United States and globally as well, but in the United States that are designed to work with and protect children and how rife they are with abuse. Because that's where what they want is. So obviously they're going to show up there. We should expect that shit. I mean, unfortunately, we should expect that there are people trying to infiltrate the medical system, particularly any place where there's high demand or weak security. We should expect that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we don't like to admit that because it says something about humanity. And I think people take that shit personally. Like I think people block themselves from believing that people could be that evil.
Bruce, you're a fascinating guy. We greatly appreciate you joining us today. Tell everybody where they can find the book and you if you're on social media.
Sure. Well, the website is the title of the book, BehindTheMurderCurtain.com. And the book is available on Amazon and all the major book places. You could download it. You could get a hard copy. Read it and then give it to someone you know that's in the medical profession and have them read it and comment on it, all right? Because this isn't something that I'm trying to hide. It's just the opposite. I'm trying to let people know. And look, the overwhelming majority of healthcare providers are honest, hardworking, dedicated people. In fact, the hospital that I used to work in, they perform miracles every day. But because that environment is so otherwise wonderful, that enables people to take advantage. And when the healthcare professionals see something, they really have to say something because they could save lives. Why wait? A famous serial killer, his name is Donald Harvey. I don't know if you remember the name. Donald Harvey, he killed people in the VA and outside of the VA. And he has this famous quote. He says, well, after I killed the first 15 and nobody questioned me, the first 15? Yeah, after I killed the first 15 and nobody questioned me, I actually thought I was ordained by God to kill people. Not that outrageous if you kill 15 people and nobody even questions you as to what your activities were. So I ask my medical professional friends, if you suspect something, say something. Do the investigation. Inside the book, I have 26 red flags on how to spot some of these people. It's really not only for law enforcement, but it's for the healthcare profession. And, you know, we love the work they do, but we are dependent on you to weed out the very rare bad apples that could kill hundreds of people.
Okay, will do. I'll check out the book. Again, Behind the Murder Curtain, Special Agent Bruce Sackman-Hunt's doctors and nurses who kill our veterans out everywhere. Thanks for joining us today, Bruce. For D'Anthony Holloway, I am Ross Patterson. We are the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.